every religion changes over time, and holidays and other institutions and religions change. And Tu B'Shvat is an excellent example of how something in a religion evolves over generations. Tu B'Shvat is not in the Bible, so you can search through the Bible for Tu B'Shvat and you won't find it, which in itself is an interesting point, because many people, especially people who are not Jewish, think of Judaism as the biblical religion, which it is not. Jews call Judaism a rabbinic religion, which means it's the religion that the rabbis shaped, using much material for the Bible, using the Bible as the foundation. But a great deal of Judaism is either not in the Bible or has changed significantly since biblical times. And Tu B'Shvat is something that wasn't in the Bible at all. It was instituted by the rabbis in post-biblical times during the time of the Second Temple. And really, Tu B'Shvat, originally, was nothing more than a kind of accounting deadline. And Tu B'Shvat simply means the 15th day of the month of Shavat. So it's just a date. And it was an accounting deadline concerning tithing. Almost everybody was a farmer in those days, and they would support the temple through their tithes. And for trees and for fruit that came from trees, they would be part of the tithe. And fruit harvested before the 15th day of Shavat would be part of the tithe for the past year. And any fruit harvested after that date would be part of the tithe for the following year. And that's all there was to it. It was called the New Year for the Trees, which sounds really intriguing, but again, there's nothing more than a way of keeping track of which tithe is from last year and which tithe belongs to the following year. In later generations, the meaning of the date became expanded, especially after the destruction of the Second Temple, the destruction of Jerusalem in the first century, and Jews were scattered to many countries around the world. It became a way of keeping a connection with the land of Israel. And so the custom grew of eating fruits that are particularly connected with the land of Israel, fruits like figs, dates, pomegranates, grapes, olives. And sometimes people would make a ceremony out of it. So that's a custom that existed in many parts of the world for centuries. So that's maybe you could call that the second stage of Tu B'Shvat's development. And then a third stage in this development occurred about 100 years ago. At that time, the land of Israel was part of the Ottoman Empire. And many Jews from Europe, in particular at that moment, were going back to the ancestral homeland, the biblical homeland. And they found that the land was devastated. It had been very poorly taken care of. Excuse me. It had been very poorly taken care of. The soil was in terrible condition. There used to be forests, but there were no forests. It was really a very desolate landscape. And other people found that too. There's a famous passage from Mark Twain when he traveled through that land. And he described the desolation of the land. It was really in awful shape. Well, the Jews who began to settle there tried to build up the land. And they used various practices to build up the soil. And one of the things they did was planting trees. And they actually planted, over time, over a period of many years, entire forests of trees. And where there had been no trees in more recent times, gradually, forests were built up one tree at a time. So Tu B'Shvat became a time for Jews around the world to think about that, in addition to the other meaning, the earlier meaning, of eating fruit that connected them back with the biblical ancestral homeland. There was this also practical need, the practical need for planting trees. And so there were programs for gathering. People would collect their pennies and donate them toward tree planting projects. So that's the third stage in the development of Tu B'Shvat. And then more recently, in the last generation or two, it's taken on yet another meaning, and it's become a kind of Jewish Earth Day. So the kind of messages, environmental projects that have been associated with Earth Day since around 1970 or thereabouts have become also part of Tu B'Shvat. So that's the latest stage in the development of this particular date. There's something that some people do called a Tu B'Shvat Seder, and it's modeled very loosely on the Passover Seder. It's really not like the Passover Seder. It has a very different meaning, but it's a way of people to gather around the table or in a room and celebrate the meanings of Tu B'Shvat. So what they'll do is prepare in advance readings, prayers, poetry that have to do with these various meanings of Tu B'Shvat, the environmental message, the planting trees message, the connection with the land message, and those will be the themes. And then generally also they'll take fruit, such as the fruits that I mentioned, dates and figs and olives and so on, and incorporate them into the Seder. The Seder does not have any kind of fixed form because it's something that you can be very creative with and make up as you see fit.
And in reading up on this, I noticed that there were a lot of dates like this in Judaism, a lot of sort of just convenient kind of dates like that that have to do surrounding the new year. Can you talk a little bit about those?
Which new year? We have the new year of the trees, right? Then there's the other famous new year, which is Rosh Hashanah. So that comes in September. And Rosh Hashanah is a different kind of new year. It's not a countdown to midnight, break out the champagne kind of new year. It's a prayerful new year in which we look back on the past year and evaluate our own lives, critique our own lives, and turn back to God for strength to improve our lives and do what we need to do to make the next year better than the one that has just passed.
I think that it's really interesting how this idea of Tu B'Shvat has evolved like this. Are there any other dates like that in Judaism that have seen this kind of evolution?
All of them have to some extent. Rosh Hashanah, the new year, is in the Bible. But the various kinds of meanings that Jews have given to the date have changed since biblical times, like the emphasis on turning back to God, soul searching. This is something that's not part of the biblical description, but it is part of ancient tradition. Passover itself, which is certainly part of the Bible, the whole Passover story is told in great detail in the Bible, and there are some particulars mentioned in the Bible about how to celebrate the Passover. But there's much more that evolved over the years after the time of the Bible. So that, for example, if you want to know how to conduct a Passover Seder, the Bible gives you some hints, but it doesn't tell you any detail. Those details were put together by the rabbis in the generations after the Bible. So that's yet another example of how the religion has evolved and changed, how it has formed and gained additional meaning and stronger meaning as the generations have passed.
And so you said that there may be some kids who might be doing something about Tu B'Shvat.
We often do a Tu B'Shvat Seder as part of our religious school. And sometimes we do it for the community as a whole. It varies from one year to the next.
Okay. Anything else that people should know about Tu B'Shvat?
Well, I think I've said most of what can possibly be said about Tu B'Shvat. It's there on the calendar. It's not a major holiday. It's not the most quote-unquote spiritual of holidays, but we can invest it with spirituality in various ways. For one thing, the Jewish connection with the land goes all the way back to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and it's part of Jewish peoplehood to be connected to the land of Israel. And it's part of the Jewish history and Jewish destiny. And Judaism, in various ways, teaches that we are obliged to respect God's creation, to love and appreciate, as well as respect the beautiful earth that God gave us, which does not belong to us but belongs to God. And so that also lends itself to good environmental messages.